My grandma and your grandma were sitting by the fire. My grandma told your grandma, I'm gonna set your flag on fire. You're talking about henna, 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 Aiko, Aiko, Ande, Giacomo Fino, Anane.
Ding dong, Las Culturistas calling.
Ooh, I am very excited about
this. I'm so excited for this week.
This is, we are recording on a Friday night, honey.
And I would rather not be anywhere else. Does that make sense?
I would rather not be anywhere else. Yeah. This is the only place I'd want to be.
Forewarning.
Here with you.
Here with you. Forewarning, I've had such a hard time stringing together sentences, coherent sentences today.
Lately or today?
Today specifically, I was at work and then I went into a meeting and then I froze at least within the span of 20 minutes, at least 18 times.
I have a canker sore under my tongue.
I have a cold sore.
You do?
Right here. See it?
It's not visible. Oh, wait. Yes. And now I see it.
Clock the cold sore.
So I clocked the cold sore. Noted. I was in the middle of a sentence like yesterday and I found out that I heard myself talking and it was like, and I was like, this is not words.
Where were you?
I was in the middle of a sentence.
Oh,
that
okay.
was my location. You guys, ugh.
This guy.
So this is such a good episode and you guys are in for it, honey.
Honey,
because
this is it.
We not only are going to be talking all about RuPaul's Drag Race All Stars 2, which I can't believe we haven't talked about yet.
I know. It's
but
a
it's
long
been
time
a little
coming.
Bit of a while since our last episode.
Yeah.
And it's such a good season, and we have truly an amazing guest to speak about this.
A lovely friend.
Yes.
Who we came up with through Story Pirates.
Yes, we all were in Story Pirates together.
She's a contributor to GQ.
Contributor to GQ, the host of Mouth Time. It's a podcast on Reductress. She's the associate editor of Reductress, one of the funniest satire
satire
periodicals on would that be the word?
Sure. Periodical.
Reductress is amazing. She's also a writer for the UCB mod team Pretty Boys.
She's on the current Lloyd team
The Nightmare. You gotta check out her everywhere, all around New York and all over across the internet. It's Nicole Silverberg.
Nicole.
Happy to be here.
We're so happy.
I don't have any chill. I'm very happy to be here.
It's a moment in time. We've actually been trying to get Nicole a long time.
I was going to say, like, an inside look into, you know, Las Culturistas, as you guys tend to record on Tuesdays.
Yes.
And I have a recurring Tuesday conflict of a rehearsal, and every time I get the text of, like, are you free?
Yeah.
It kills me to not be free. So
it burns.
But here we are.
And below and behold, here we are on a Friday night, and all of us just have gaping holes in our schedule.
Oh, my God. Huge holes.
And we're here. Now, Nicole, the way we start out the episodes is we have to dig in here, and we have to talk about the culture that shaped Nicole Silverberg. When did Nicole Silverberg decide culture was for her?
When was culture for you?
Yeah.
I guess I've just always been, you know, kind of mildly aware of culture, even if I didn't know exactly what it was.
Yes.
You know, grew up with movies.
Mm-hmm. That's unique.
Yeah,
yes.
I don't know. I'm from Arizona, so I don't know if this is true for other people, but for me at least, there's a lot of music in my house.
Oh, okay. Yes. Yeah. Lots of music.
Lots of music. My parents are both musical, but like love music.
Yes.
Yeah.
Though, you know, my dad runs a family business and my mom's an accountant. So music isn't necessarily a part of their occupation,
sure.
But they love music. So I guess probably music would be my, like, music was the first thing I felt like an expert on,
so,
culture-wise.
So, this is a question I have, because I find that this helps define a person.
Yes. Sure.
Who is your dad's favorite musical artist, and who is your mom's favorite musical artist? And this is very telling. Do they have a favorite musical artist?
I mean, they love music, and they listen to so much. I think it's very hard to choose just one. Mm-hmm. But I think my mom has seen Tom Petty in concert maybe 6 times.
That's a good mom artist.
That's a good mom artist.
And, like, I mean, and they love so much. But
yeah.
But my mom is a huge Tom Petty fan. And then my dad, I mean, I think I would just have to say the Beatles for my dad. Yeah. But, I mean, you know, a lot of classics, like Bruce Springsteen, mm-hmm, Simon and Garfunkel, mm-hmm, Carole King, James Taylor. You know, that was kind of the soundtrack of my childhood.
Wow.
Now, Nicole Silverberg, though, famously did an entire show as Meat Loaf.
I did. Okay,
see, and I couldn't believe you didn't just say Meat Loaf.
Okay, so my my parents do both love Meatloaf, and my dad in particular had the Meatloaf album Bad Out of Hell, which I, you know, sang selections off of for my show last year, in his car. And my dad would often drive me to school on his way driving to work. So a lot of music on the way to work. And
that just ingrained.
And Meatloaf was definitely a recurring star. Although my drive to school was shorter than any one song on that album.
So
but
you
yes,
got about
I love Meatloaf
halfway through like one track on Bad Out of Hell.
But okay, it was a daily ritual where you would listen to Bad Out of Hell.
Yeah.
And my dad was always really like, I've babysat before, and you know, kids just get obsessed with songs they want to hear over and over and over again. You get kind of frustrated. And I think when it's your own kid, you have a little bit more leeway to be like, not right now. How about we listen to something else? But my dad would let me like obsessively play things over and over and over again. I think when I was in seventh grade, I became obsessed with the song Your Smiling Face by James Taylor, which is like the cheesiest song. And we would listen to it on repeat for like 15 minutes every morning, at least. I mean, depending on traffic, could be more. Like for months. It was just like, whenever I see your smiling face for on loop.
Okay, but not the worst song selection for a seventh grader.
No,
not bad at all. I could be way worse. Could be Jimmy Buffett, which was mine.
Well, I was like a low-key music snob.
Yeah.
Like when I was in eighth grade, I went on an international choir tour to England, Scotland, and Wales with the Tucson Girls Chorus, of which I was a part for 9 years.
Wow. This is...
I didn't know this.
Yes,
culture.
Big choir geek. And we went on like a Beatles tour, and I remember thinking that everyone else wasn't a true fan of the Beatles. Like I thought,
isn't that what everyone thinks?
Because none of my girlfriends were like into oldies. Yeah. They all loved like Michelle Branch,
right.
I like didn't. I was so jealous of Michelle Branch that I didn't like her. If that makes any sense, I just was like, I would like to be Michelle Branch.
Yeah.
So she's
what
my
about
enemy.
You makes you able to do this?
I mean, she could play the guitar, which I definitely couldn't do. But it's fine. but like for that reason, I was just like, you guys don't actually love the Beatles. I love the Beatles because I would like wear an oversized Abbey Road T-shirt with jeans for like 3 years. Anyway, so yeah, that's my journey with culture.
That's culture. That's
you
a
know,
culture journey.
Michelle Branch, somebody came into the Story Pirates auditions yesterday and sang Michelle Branch. And then somebody came in later and sang Michelle Branch again. Michelle Branch got represented twice yesterday
that's
at these auditions.
So the people who just graduated from college were the last people who I overlapped with when I was an undergrad. Mm-hmm. So they were freshmen when I was seniors, and a couple of them reached out to me about Story Pirate auditions, and they were like, what's your advice? I was just like, don't sing Disney or a musical theater song. That's like my advice. So
that'll
you know what?
You.
Michelle Branch, like, it works.
And we remembered them.
Can I point out something? I was talking to someone about this, and they brought up the fact that today's high school students will listen to Panic at the Disco as like an
throwback.
Old band. Like the way that we might have listened to Weezer, I guess, in high school.
Yeah.
But isn't that crazy?
That's horrid.
But do you think that they actually are listening to Panic at the Disco?
I think they're
Is
listening
that a dumb
to,
question?
I think they are. I think like kids these days are loving like I Write Sins Not Tragedies. They're like, this is the best song ever. Like, this is what they used to listen to 10 years ago.
Was it Panic at the Disco that kind of had like a comeback recently?
Yeah, I think they
did,
put out
right?
an album last year. And, like,
they did.
Yeah, and like Blink-182 and Good Charlotte are putting out new stuff.
I have to say, that
Good
is one
Charlotte.
Thing. And Good Charlotte too. That is one trend that I am so happy I said, even at the time, like,
this is
not
dumb.
Good. Like the Good Charlotte Panic at the Disco thing, I was nope.
I think I liked The Hits by Good Charlotte. I never liked Panic at the Disco, and I really didn't like Fall Out Boy.
No, I hated Fall
Out Boy.
Brand New, I hated.
Oh, see. Okay. I liked Brand New.
Guys, no way.
I saw Brand New in concert. I saw them at Madison Square Garden, and they opened up for Dashboard Confessional, who I love.
I love Dashboard.
I did not hear of them until college.
Excellent. See, they were big for me in high school, and then in college they continue to be big. Like, what's the A Mark Omission, A Brand of Scar?
Yeah.
That is a really good album, and it's so weepy and like twee and
just,
like sad.
The most,
but so
overwrought.
I thought that Death Cab for Cutie and Dashboard Confessional, I think in my mind growing when I was in high school, I thought they were the same band.
But it's at that fair. It turns out it's Death Cab and Postal Service that were basically the same band.
And I also now have since listened to Dashboard Confessional, and they don't sound like Death Cab for Cutie really.
No.
But I think it was just something in the name that
They're adjacent to each other. Maybe
such great heights too. They were
such great heights. Postal service.
Oh yeah, you just said that.
Wait, can I say one thing about Michelle Branch real quick?
Oh, please.
Let's discuss Michelle Branch.
It seems like we have two Michelle Branch haters at the table.
No. Okay, not a hater, but acknowledging the fact that she's perfectly average, which honestly is like a wonderful thing sometimes.
What was her song with Santana?
All Game of Love.
All in the game of love. Yeah, that one.
Yeah.
Just I hated her that. Debut album, The Spirit Room. You guys, obsessed with this. 2001, 2002 maybe, circa. I just had fantasies about her showing up at my middle school and playing a pop-up concert.
She used to do that.
And then her inviting me up on stage so that we could do a duet of All You Wanted. Oh, my God.
To be like you. That was the song they sang
yesterday.
Okay,
that song is good.
Yeah.
Just listen to her stuff again. She ends every single word, syllable with Yep. That's it. Matt called it.
Everything. Yeah. She was giving that pop affectation. She came out at the same time as my mortal enemy, Avril Lavigne.
And I loved Avril Lavigne, and I loved her beyond the first album.
It's been so nice having Nicole on the show.
You can't get rid of me, bitch.
I don't think so, honey.
Avril Lavigne is a fighter, and I take that from her.
Okay. Can I tell you, I did like...
Girlfriend?
Whatever.
Hey, you.
Yeah.
That's I did not really like that song. I liked her moody stuff because I was going, you know, because I was a preteen.
Yes.
And I just like needed that type of thing. I was embarrassed by her public behavior, like the wearing the tie and stuff like that. Like I didn't think that was cool. I didn't like idolize her.
Sure.
But her music
was good.
Was like an emotional necessity for me.
I agree. Her second album and your tweens.
Yeah. Do you remember? La, da, da, da,
la, da, da, da. Yeah, like,
that
I
song
loved
was
that
good.
Song.
Also, when I first heard
That's
"I'm with
happy
You,"
happy ending, right?
Yeah.
So much for my
That was. I'm thinking about a different one from her first album, but that song was so good. And also, the better song on that album, I think, is
I can't remember what one's called, but like the eighth track on that album, I loved because you know it was a CD.
Well, when I first heard "I'm with You," I knew it was Avril Lavigne, and we hadn't heard her sing like that up until that point. And when she started hitting her high notes at the end, I was like, "Fuck!"
Right?
Really she's actually good. And I'm so mad.
I remember having that feeling about Katy Perry. I really didn't like Katy Perry when she first came out when I was like in high school.
No.
And then when I realized she actually could sing, though, I was like, ugh. Damn it.
Have
like,
you watched?
I mean, she...
Her MTV Unplugged set.
MTV Unplugged. That's what I was going to say.
She's not like... Like, I think that Taylor Swift has gotten better at singing over the course of her career.
She got better microphones that correct her pitch. I'll tell you that.
That's definitely... But
technology's
gotten
better.
But I think she just like sounds... Generally just sounds better.
More
like,
confident.
Yeah. And... Katie, and that's so when Taylor Swift first like started becoming popular, I was like, yawn, no thank you.
Yep. Uh-huh.
And I felt the same way about Katy Perry, less yawn, more just like eye roll.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, like I hated I Kissed a Girl. I just thought like, so what?
Yeah. I mean, that had One Hit Wonder written all over
it. I know.
It.
Sure. But you know, some modern culture. Did you guys see the recent video of Katy Perry on Ellen DeGeneres?
No, what she did.
So, the Orlando Survivor, right?
So she's... Oh. Okay, so two things. Well, I guess three things. First of all, Katy Perry, like, believes in, like, aliens and mermaids and all this stuff, and she's, like, there are, like, lots of quotes from her in interviews where she reveals herself to be a weirdo, but you don't actually hear her saying it, so you kind of can interpret it however you want. That's the first thing. The second thing is I have, like, a full-on fetish for Ellen DeGeneres giving money to people. Mm-hmm. Like, I've seen maybe every single video. And the weird thing is I don't really like her show, and I hate how she talks to kids. I find it really upsetting. Like, I think she thinks kids are dumb, and I think she talks to kids like they're dumb, and that is always something that bothers me when anyone does it.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, and she even is, like, low key, very low key, like smug when she gives money to people, because she knows the power she has, and I think she has a good heart, and I think she's a good person, but it's like,
I'm not.
She's smug. She's smug, like straight up to anybody.
But
she's so self righteous.
But with those two things put together, Katy Perry. So there's someone who survived the Orlando shootings, mm-hmm. and the song Rise by Katy Perry, I guess, just like got him through it, like time in the hospital and stuff. And so she brought Katy Perry onto the show to surprise him. And I mean, but everyone's weeping. It was really touching. And then Katy Perry says that she will pay for this guy's first year of college because he wants to go to film school. So it's all very moving. But
oh my god, what is the turn here?
Katy Perry is insane. Like, yeah, she just, of course, she goes, "You're a light. We're all lights." Like, and she just means it, and it's crazy. Mm-hmm. It's crazy hearing
she
words
was
like
married
that.
To Russell Brand.
I have a Katy Perry story.
Oh my god, tell it.
So in April, my friend Jay Malski, our friend Jay Malski,
yes, hello, Jay.
Both went to this Hillary fundraiser concert.
Oh yeah, I remember that.
I got 2 free tickets, but meanwhile we went and it was all rich Democrats, and I felt really gross. But we're sitting there, and then Katy Perry's the headlining act. So Hillary goes up to speak, and she says a couple words, and it's nice. And then Katy Perry goes up, and she has this huge set, and it's just beautiful, like, gay magic shit. And then at one point, Katy Perry, like, has to, like, because the whole night has been speeches from, like, her campaign staff. And Bill gave a speech and was amazing, and Chelsea gave a speech. Julianne Moore gave a speech.
Bless.
And then Katy Perry just, I guess, has to, like, keep the pattern going. And she has this break in her set where she just talks to us, to everybody in Radio City. And she's like, she just does not know how to talk about politics.
No.
Straight up, she's like, "Don't you want someone who has the blueprints for the house?" So that you have
Katy Perry, by the way. Speaking
so that you have bay windows. So you gotta know where to put the windows if you want the view. And she just made. This is being very generous. My impression is being very generous. She was incoherent. Could not speak about fucking anything.
They probably picked up on that because when she was at the DNC, the first thing she said was, "I don't have an education." But we all should have the option to. And then she sang fucking Rise. Which, I'm sorry, that song is bullshit.
I don't care for it, but.
Can I tell you why I don't like Avril Lavigne?
Because I was
fine with Avril. I was accepting of her as like someone who was in the pop culture like lexicon. I was like, yeah, sure, I get complicated. Skater Boy is fun. I'm with you. I've just heard it, and I guess she can really sing. But here's why I don't like Avril Lavigne.
Here we go.
It is a moment, and when people show you who they are, believe them.
Maya Angelou.
Thank you, Maya Angelou, Oprah Winfrey, and Shonda Rhimes, the 3 women who have said that.
Yes.
It's the chicken before the egg situation. Who said it first?
Sure, sure, sure.
Sure.
We'll never
all
know.
Contemporaries. Yes. So they really came up together.
Yeah, they did. You know, I think they all shared a dorm at college. Yeah. So basically, it was the 2001 VMAs.
Okay.
And it's, of course, the VMAs are at the end of the summer. And 2002, I'm sorry, excuse me, 2002. So
we're in a post 9/11 world.
We're in a post 9/11 world. I'm in sixth grade. It's the summer after sixth grade. I'm going into the seventh grade. I become obsessed with a little show called American Idol. I become devout towards Kelly Clarkson.
Yes.
I become
well-known. Well-documented.
Well-known. If listeners
Culturista
of the podcast
has, will know.
Rule number 6 of culture, Matt loves Kelly Clarkson. So they had Justin and Kelly on the VMAs to present the award for Best New Artist.
Ooh.
And they're up there, and Kelly's doing her like thing, which was her brand at the time, to be like, "Oh, where am I? Like, ducka, ducka, ducka. Like, I'm from Texas."
She played that part
like,
well.
She did it for such a long time. She
the
did
highlights
it very
helped.
Well.
Highlights
she
helped.
Was the,
highlights.
The, gloss, the chunky blonde highlights.
Oh, yeah.
My mom to this day says, "No one can pull off that chunky blonde highlight except Kelly Clarkson." To this day, she says it.
Okay, so they're presenting.
So they're presenting the award, and she's playing her thing and doing her thing. She was, of course, being the perfect George Bush era girl next door.
Of course.
We love it.
Which is, you know, big reason why she took that title.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Had never been on a plane.
Never been on a plane. Or something
yes,
like
we
that.
All remember.
Burleson, Texas. So they're, you know, announcing the nominees, and they cut to Avril Lavigne, who's like fucking around in her seat with her band or whatever, and like doing her own thing, sure. And like, you know, like sticking her tongue out of the camera and being like a punk rock princess. And then Avril Lavigne wins. So Avril Lavigne like makes her way up to the stage, and Kelly Clarkson goes to hug her.
Oh no.
Avril Lavigne takes Kelly's arm, lifts it over her head, pushes her out of the way, takes the award, and starts giving her speech.
That's
and
rude.
I was like, I will never forget
that. That's unacceptable.
And I am so pleased that Kelly has had a longer career.
When?
And I think that it's karma. I think it's true karma. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. How old
and
do you think Avril Lavigne was at that time? Like 19?
Like 18 or 19.
Yeah. 18, yeah. Wow. Because it literally just occurred to me that she was really young.
Yeah, she was. That was like a thing at the time. It was like guys were like, I think she's really fucking hot. Like on like the radio, the guys would call in and they'd be like, yeah, I've been hearing this song and like I saw her on TRL and she's hot. And the DJs would be like, well, she's 18, which was like, I've now realized has been like a running thing. Like Britney Spears being this like object of everyone's sexual desire. And she was like 16, 17.
People trying to know for sure whether or not Britney Spears was a virgin was such a massive part of popular culture.
Yeah. It was. And her breast implants too.
Yeah. Even like a joke on SNL when she hosted.
It was in the opening monologue.
Yeah. When her boobs started moving.
Yeah.
She was such a good sport about it. I get too sad talking about Britney.
But hold on. Yeah, me too.
I listened to her a lot today, actually.
Britney's second time hosting SNL was phenomenal. She was great.
She's a good host.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean...
She had a good turn on Will and Grace, too.
I gotta say... Oh, my God.
Okay, and How I Met Your Mother.
Yeah. I've never seen an episode of How I Met Your Mother. But I will say that I think the part of the brain of, like, Britney Spears and Lindsay Lohan that is just like an absolute shitstorm of chaos that makes them unhealthy is probably what also makes them good at like doing a live show like SNL with like not having any experience and just being like, I can do this.
Yeah, 100%.
Like, I don't think they're unrelated.
Yeah, no, Lindsay Lohan was also amazing.
She was,
so
good. That's like one of the best Eppies.
Yeah. I will never forget. This is a big part of my culture.
Harry Potter sketch?
No.
I was thinking
Harry Potter sketch, yes, but same episode when they do it was the first ever Debbie Downer.
Yeah, Downer.
And it was
set
in Disney
World, which is like so you.
It's very me. Yeah. The whole thing was, and I remember when they started breaking, I just like literally was gasping for air in my bedroom. And that was when I truly fell in love with SNL.
You watch that back again and you still laugh.
And
incredible. It's so genuine. It's so good.
Yeah, it's so good. And we met a writer at SNL. His name's James Anderson.
James Anderson,
who wrote
James.
Literally all my favorite sketches, and I was finding out in the moment of meeting him that he all my favorite sketches, like Deep House Dish,
Gays in Space.
Probably wouldn't be surprised if he had something to do with
all
those other
sketches.
He and
Paula Pell, I think, co-wrote a lot of the Gemini's Twin sketches. He was the gay voice that like little boys like Matt and I at the time grew up with. We're like, this is so funny. We're responding to this. We want that.
I just loved telling him, like, thank you for literally, like, writing sketches that made me laugh for reasons that I didn't even know why. Like, it just touched a nerve in me.
Sudie introduced us to him.
Yeah, it was crazy.
And then he was just in his office watching that episode. It was the Julie Louis-Dreyfus one from last season. And then he sat with us and watched the rest of the ep. And then we talked about Drag Race. He loved Thorgy. He loved Bob. It was just this beautiful.
Oh, my God. I love
that. And then I had the instinct to be like, I'm sorry, but I feel like I have to ask this. Did you have anything to do with Deep House Dish? And he was like, yeah, that was mine. And I literally exploded. I was like, that was my whole life.
It was really
beautiful. Do you remember the sketch Deep House Dish?
Oh,
the
series?
Whenever it would come on, I would explode.
Yeah. Ugh.
So good.
James Anderson.
Culture, it's important.
Culture is everywhere.
Everywhere. That's not even a rule. That's just a...
That's just a fact.
That's
a
just
fact.
An overhanging... That's just a theme of life.
One more quick thing about Avril, and then we'll move on to our episode.
Sure. I don't know how I feel about the fact that Avril has literally taken over this podcast. I've worked so hard to build Avril Lavigne. Get out of here. Go,
Bowen. One last thing.
Sally.
Her song for the Aragon soundtrack, phenomenal.
Don't know it.
Oh,
Keep Holding On?
Yeah.
Oh. Nothing you can say.
Nothing you can do. There's no other way when it comes to the truth.
Not even ringing a bell.
Not even. Well, they did it on Glee and it was pretty emotional. You know, it was when Glee was good in season one.
Oh my
God. Did you like Glee?
Okay, I really liked Glee the first season. I will say, you know that part of the magnifying glass on your Instagram where it's like discover?
Yeah.
Yes.
There's something sinister in my algorithm that Glee fan art makes up 50% of it.
How?
And I don't know how, but it's like, it's so...
People that are still making Glee fan art to this day?
What are they drawing? Yes. What are they making?
I don't know. Well, and so much of it is unfamiliar to me because I think I only really watched the first season of Glee. Mm-hmm. Maybe the second season. I truly can't remember.
Oh my God.
But yeah, it's like, I just want to go there and discover as Instagram wants me to, but I cannot because there is so much Glee content.
Oh my God.
Glee was truly good for 13 episodes.
Yeah.
It was truly good.
It was actually pretty good.
I was always weirded out by Matthew Morrison's character.
Yeah.
I felt like I was so sexually unsure of what I was supposed to make of him.
I was pretty sure sexually of what I was making of him, but I understand. I definitely wanted to fuck Will Schuster. In fact, much more than I was interested in any of, like...
Schuster was Matthew Morrison.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. But I...
But you mean the character.
Wasn't into, you know, rest in peace, Puck...
Corey Monteith.
Wasn't into Puck, who... That's a crazy story.
Yeah, yeah, that is a crazy story.
That's insane.
That is insane.
But it's also not surprising. Like, it's crazy, no, but it's you're not. Just like, I mean, I guess, yeah.
Yeah. You know who was hot? Was the blonde guy that came on, like, later in the show.
I don't know
what
if I know
who
that
was
is.
His name. Honestly, who knows?
You know, Brittany, that actress was just a backup dancer for Beyonce, and then she got cast.
Yeah, she was on Beyonce's episode of SNL.
Yeah, and then she got cast on Glee as just, like, a dancer. And then her character just like broke out and like
my mod team at UCB used to be like permanently stationed on the schedule after Gravid Water, mm-hmm. and Diana Agron was on Gravid Water 1 week, and I just saw her backstage and I was just like, you are so
gorgeous.
So
I've seen her in just, person she too. Is, after
I mean,
a
she's
gravid.
Beautiful.
Yeah, she's absolutely
and she,
gorgeous.
And she just has this big smile and she's so radiant.
Was she good?
Yeah. On Gravid?
I didn't see it because I was just there for a show.
She was supposed to do the DCM Gravid Water, and then something happened where she couldn't do it. She was going to come do
she
it.
She keeps doing that. Must mean she's good.
I think she probably is good. I thought she was good on the show.
I mean, backstage, she was just like, you know, palling around, and she just seemed like super chill and nice. But
love it.
But also like distractingly gorgeous.
She's a beautiful human. She's gorgeous. Human. Who I heard is a absolute nightmare, and this will shock no one, is Lea Michele.
Of course. In fact,
I have a friend who was at the same party as her, and this might be a little telling, but he went to the closet to get his coat, opened the door, and there was Lea Michele rifling through all the coats, and the host of the party said, Lea, what are you doing? And she just came out and said, I was looking for drugs.
No.
Can I say that on here? I mean,
we're spilling all the tea.
And then you hear about Corey Monteith, and actually I had another friend who we all know, I'll tell you guys off the air, but he was friends with the cast member on Glee, and apparently, they all were big drug users.
Not surprising, and again, not surprising.
But it's like, you give kids that age a lot of fucking money, or honestly, not even kids, young adults that age pretending to be kids, a lot of
having
fucking
a
money.
False sense of freedom
in
autonomy,
LA, where you don't necessarily have that much to do.
No.
That's why I think. Like, Bowen and I are going out to L.A.
I know.
And people keep saying there's no culture there. There's no culture there. It's boring. And I feel like that must... Maybe that's the case of why people get involved in such weird shit around there is because there's not much to do and they have a lot of money.
No, is L.A. different from New York?
I think... I hear that it is. I hear that there's a debate to be had about L.A. versus New York.
Not enough people talk about the differences between L.A. and New York.
I just, you know, if someone thinks that one's better than the other, I'd love to hear their thoughts.
Yeah,
I would love to hear how you get around in L.A., you know...
Yeah,
I hear they have Uber, but you know I'm willing to hear more.
Yeah,
guys.
Today's episode.
You know this is a moment.
Ugh.
Because All Stars 2 has been so good. We
it's
can agree
incredible.
It's been so good.
It has changed television.
I agree.
And
And actually, I mean, it's like feels so stupid to say, but it actually has changed my life.
I would 100% agree with you. The mentalities, this is maybe going to sound bizarre, but I thought today on the subway, if I ever saw RuPaul, what would I say to him? And our friend Janie Stolar,
has
seen Ru.
Previous
and
guest.
She handled it the best way possible.
Yes.
Yeah.
She knows him.
She's an idol.
She knows how he thinks.
Yeah. She's a genius.
She basically just put her head down, walked next to him and said, I just want you to
know that I love you.
And then what did
he
say
said,
back?
He looked and he said, I love you too. And he meant it.
He meant it.
And like the thing is anyone who doesn't know anything about RuPaul thinks that that's a joke because no, you say no. like, and he meant it. And you know, you laugh because for other people that would be insane. But yep, for Ru, it's true.
For Ru, it's true. And then look, 2012, right after I graduated from college, I was on the train. And then we stopped at Wall Street mm-hmm. and then people in the car screamed, look, that's RuPaul. And RuPaul was just, had just come out of a car, was in this beautiful suit, looked so good.
Yeah.
And just threw up a peace sign and just waved at people and just looked so cool. Well, and like, he's a suave
deity.
And,
yeah.
But just.
He's a guru.
Radiant yeah. in person. You're like, your eye goes straight to that person no matter what like you think of that person. I was just like, oh god, RuPaul's beautiful.
Well, I would say just for myself, like, just like the little nuggets of wisdom that he drops make it very clear to me, like, that I mean, this is a way to live your life.
Yes. I had to literally pause the episode. So I mean, you know, we're recording this, the third episode just came out last night.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And the first two episodes were like these supersized drama filled and wisdom filled episodes. And last night was like a more traditional clipping along sort of epi. But when they were doing the judging at the end and Katya was being criticized for her Princess Di, which, you know, we'll talk.
Yes.
But when Ru was like, to be fair.
Yeah.
Like, to be fair, you know, Princess Di is the only person being portrayed here that we actually know what she looked like and maybe Katya didn't have the same creativity or didn't have the same leeway to be creative as the other queens,
right? Which is perceptive.
I paused the episode and I turned to Branson and I was like, I mean, Ru did not have to say that.
No, that's true.
But I mean, which is such like a it's a small,
but it's a glimpse into the brilliance of Ru. But then when Ru said that, I was like, but wait a minute, Roxy played Ava Perón, and you technically have photography, but maybe it's not like as burned into the consciousness of.
First of all, I don't even
the world.
We'll get to that. I would just say, like, for me, what makes the whole idea of Ru coming forward, like being in the consciousness and saying, like, you know, we're all born naked and the rest is drag. That is so freeing.
Revolutionary.
It's just, because I think it's truly the first time, like, and of course, as you go into adulthood and as you kind of, you know, mature, you do realize, like, what is this and what is this and why do I dress this way and why are they selling me things all the time and why this? I remember the first time I think I've said this before, but the first time I ever became aware of the fact that I was like a pawn in society is when Sudi and I were watching The X Factor and Sudi said, count how many Pepsi cans you see. And I was like, oh my God. And all of a sudden I realized that I was being aggressively catered to as a consumer and they didn't care about me as a person. And I was like, whoa, what's the world? And then RuPaul talking about like the Matrix.
Yeah.
Like the world is the Matrix and whether you're going to be a participant in that or not.
Mm-hmm. Once you realize it's the Matrix, then you can really have fun.
And you know what too? Like the man behind the curtain, the Wizard of Oz.
I think about that all the time.
Movie is the Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
Talking about when you see the man behind the curtain, your instinct is to be angry. And then you can decide later to not be angry. You can just play in the Matrix and decide to have fun with it.
I mean, the thing about RuPaul that makes him in my mind like such a religious figure is he truly has a stock philosophies and it's Jesus-esque in that there are these sets of principles that are completely inhabits them.
Yes.
He shares analysts. Them with everybody.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They're for everybody.
Yeah.
It's all from a place of love. Mm-hmm. And it's not like he's not really a very fluid figure in the sense that like he doesn't have this kind of like evolving philosophy that like changes depending on the setting. Mm-hmm. It's like you hear him talk about the same things over and over again and they're always true. And it's so advanced.
And you go back and watch older stuff where he's talking and it's the same, like the same nuggets of wisdom that
you
are there
hear
in the
him
90s.
Talk about the inner saboteur. I mean,
yes,
maybe you could probably find him talking about it 50 times.
Yeah.
And it's always correct. Like that's the thing that's stunning.
You know what I've been really stewing on lately, and like this has been with me for years, but like lately I've really paid attention to this, is the Marc Maron episode where
call is coming from inside the house.
Yes,
that. Related to that, this part where he goes, after he talks about the Wizard of Oz, and he's like, and you know what? It's like Dorothy realizes at the end of the movie, like, it was always in her to go home. She always had the power, and she just didn't realize it. And she didn't realize until after she saw the man behind the curtain, and then she realizes, oh, I've had it in me all this time. And
yeah, no one could do it for me.
And isn't that, like, so liberating? I know that sounds so cheesy, but, like, it's huge.
Wizard of Oz is incredible.
Ugh,
that's
amazing.
An amazing story.
Yeah.
It's just, like, and is RuPaul a Buddhist?
No.
What is it?
Well, I mean, he practices yoga.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, I'm not saying like as a religious practice. Yeah. I'm just saying like he's very spiritual and like connected with like his body and like, right. You know, yeah. Just kind of the other. But I don't think he
prescribes to anything.
Yeah.
Well, not that I know of.
Right. Yeah. Right.
And because I've been trying to, it's the closest I've felt to feeling religious in a long time.
Wow.
To be honest.
Yes.
With you. Because I finally have mantras that I can say. And I've been able to, I think, help people by telling them this. You know, we have a mutual friend who was struggling a long time and we had lunch and I feel like just by telling that person, like, you know, life is drag, like, I feel like that helped and then something huge happened
to that
friend. And so I don't know. I just feel like it means everything to just say, you know what? I'm actually going to make the decision to not care and just do me, because who made the rules anyway?
Exactly.
Right.
You know, I remember like just before I ever started to like feel like I quote unquote was doing well and kind of knew myself as a comic.
Mm-hmm.
I had people that I looked up to and I really wanted to find out why. And then I went to go see Josh Sharp and Aaron Jackson's UCB show, Fucking Identical Twins at UCB, and Shannon O'Neill came out and she said something beforehand, which was the reason why this show works is because they don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
Like, they do them. And then I clocked that. And then I also read Yes, Please by Amy Poehler.
Mm-hmm.
And she said something like, when you're having fun, everyone has fun.
Well, and that's what I was going to say is, I never really thought about fun until recently. Like, I just, I think I'm a pretty, I can be kind of intense. I think for being a comedian, I'm a very serious person for the most part. And like, I, because I'm not naturally carefree, I always had linked being carefree to having fun or that fun is like an activity, not the result of an activity. Mm-hmm. I was like, well, let's do something fun. And then whether or not you have fun is irrelevant.
Right.
But Rue is constantly in the pursuit of fun.
Yes.
And like fun in a way that is just, I mean, it's there for everybody and it's, there's something deeper to it. But like since seriously like letting Rue into my life and my headspace, I've developed more of like a taste and an instinct for like finding fun and kind of realizing like that actually should be the main mission.
What Rue says is that fun is not a carefreeness or a carelessness, it's actually an awareness of circumstances.
Yes.
And we're talking about RuPaul, guys. I'm just saying this in a way that sounds very cultish, but I think it's like when Rue entered my life, I'm fine with it, but like Rue has changed my life.
Yes.
You know, I mean, I feel I can speak about it.
Well, and the thing about Rue is that Rue is like not without problems.
No, of course.
There, because when it comes to things like gender identity and language, like it's so weird. Like, okay, Donald Trump will come in front of a group and he'll be like, people want to say this about me, but it's just words. And obviously he doesn't mean it because he's so sensitive. And you read it as defensiveness and you see it as kind of childishness, like immaturity. It's weird to see. But it's stranger to see RuPaul talk about words because he means it.
Yes.
And when he says words do not matter and that it doesn't matter what you call something and it doesn't, and that words can't hurt you, it's like, that's not true for most people.
Yeah.
And it's in some ways like a little irresponsible to like believe that that is how it works. But there is like inspiration that I draw from seeing him like kind of reach this enlightened state where he's like, you cannot touch me.
I was talking to Dylan Marin about that very thing because like I was just really worked up one day after some internet commenter like said something very derogatory. And then Dylan deals with that every day.
Yeah, he really does.
And then we were talking about this exact point that Rue says that words don't matter and words shouldn't hurt you. And we were like, but wait a minute, that doesn't seem congruent to this other philosophy that's built around RuPaul. And so, yeah, that is. But
well, that's drag, though, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
And again, you could also say, you know, choosing to be offended or seek out that kind of situation is, you know, being a part of the matrix.
Yes.
And willingly being a participant in the acceptance of the bullying you're going to go through.
Yeah.
And so, like, I guess, and I what I think RuPaul, like, for example, you know, he had to take out the "you got shemale."
Yeah.
Right.
And everything after contestants that had been on the show were upset about it and spoke out about it. I think RuPaul, maybe he wouldn't admit this, but I think he truly feels a little bit offended and feels a little bit like, you seriously, this is so obvious that you're going to like decide to turn against me. Like RuPaul, I've heard him say, like, I've been on the front lines.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like he's just upset, I think, and maybe a little irritated at himself for being upset and allowing himself to get upset about it, because I think he is, that like these people that he represents, I think,
are biting
in a fun
the hand.
Way and like are not even biting the hand, but like being ungrateful.
Yeah.
And I do think that he probably checked his own ego about it or is aware of the fact that that is the ego rising.
Well, I think it's hard because it's like, I don't think he means that words don't matter.
No.
I just think it means that you can rise above
words.
Sure. That like that's the self prevails. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really complicated because words really can hurt you.
Yeah.
But
they make a point about it on this episode. You know what I mean? Yeah. They get into it.
Oh my gosh. I mean, like, I honestly have to tell you, I'm like feeling overwhelmed right now because there's so much I want to talk about because there's Rue. There's Rue as the person, the guru. There's Rue as the host and the mastermind.
Yeah.
And
then there's just the fucking show.
Which
that
is amazing.
I think
that especially right now in like the trajectory of the season right now, they all are very intertwined. So let's start talking about the show.
We're getting deep. Can I just say we've gotten deep as shit.
Yes.
This episode.
But you know, I have had a hard year. Mm-hmm. And like I just, you know, and it happens, and like I've just had some shit this year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And watching RuPaul's Drag Race has been a vital part of my self-care.
Oh, huge.
I mean, we're all on the same page.
Massive, like, and it's not just listening to the Marin interview, which I do. I mean, I re-listen to that one because it's just so good. Mm-hmm. And it's like re-watching older episodes. Like, it has been a part of healing for me this year.
Wow.
So, I do have to say, as a woman, sometimes it can be confusing because drag is not my part of my culture.
Right.
And there are certain things that by doing it, it's appropriation. And so I can never fully be like in the fandom as much as a gay man can, as it should be. But like it's kind of what makes you like a true follower, if that makes any sense.
So.
Like,
I
can't put myself in the place of a contestant or even a judge on the show just by ruling out like identity. But because of the overarching philosophy that Rue has, that we're all born naked and the rest is drag, like you can really get like as close as you possibly can and still be a part of it all. It's kind of bizarre.
And even Matt and I, as gay men who don't do drag, cannot fully like place ourselves and like immerse ourselves in the same way. It's like there can't be a full parody of the things of identity.
It's so fascinating because the show is truly for everyone. I've never met someone who started watching the show and did not fall in love with it.
Exactly.
And Branson, my boyfriend, straight man, is part of our, we have a Facebook fan group where we discuss.
Yes, yes. And Branson and is a part of
Branson
it.
Yeah. is part of the group, and he reads everything, but mm-hmm. he doesn't comment. And he just, he, and whether or not there's a right answer or not, he just is like, he is even not then just being a straight man. He's like, it's just, he's like, I have opinions and I love talking about them in person. He's like, but it feels like co-opting the conversation from the place of a straight man. He's like, I just can't do it.
I can say that I welcome those conversations with everybody.
I mean, like, me too.
I truly just want to talk about it with anyone who will listen.
Yeah. Anyone.
You know, I guess I just don't care. I just think it's fun. I think it's fun for everybody. And also, you have to remember, talking about what belongs to who, like, we're watching men dress up as women.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so...
And like, it's more than that.
Yeah. But the thing is, we have a contemporary, too. And I would like to hear what you have to think about this, Nicole.
Okay.
And this is a great friend of all of ours. And I don't even remember... I don't even know if she remembers saying this.
I know, yes. Uh-huh.
But one time, I was discussing RuPaul's Drag Race with this person. And she said, yeah, it's fun. It's just a shame that drag queens hate women. And I really, and this is an extremely smart person, and I really had to think about and consider that point of view. And I don't even know if they still feel this way, but I really had to think about and consider. And what do you think about that ideology?
Well, I think it's hard because I don't think that a lot of drag queens are dressing up as women. Like, right. That's not how I think
about it.
A
woman would never dress like that.
It's female illusion in every sense of the word.
For some. And then for others, it's a character that is an expression of femininity, yeah. But it's not an expression of womanhood.
Right.
There's so... And this is a thought that I have. When we see on RuPaul's Drag Race or in a live performance of drag... We're watching the height of a portrayal of an empowered woman.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And that is not exactly how the natural state of womanhood in our society. When we picture a woman on the street, we don't see them as a supermodel of the world. Mm-hmm. And we don't see them, we see them functioning in society, interacting with other people and experiencing the oppression that comes along with that. And absolutely. When we think of an empowered woman, it comes in many, many different forms. But in a lot of ways, we perceive beauty as a weakness that undermines a woman's strength of character mm-hmm. because we are kind of trained when we're growing up that your appearance is antithetical to your intelligence or to your sense of self or your creativity or whatever, even though, of course, it isn't. But because the appearance of drag is so crucial to its success, and so we're watching women, and even when we say like, oh, she's so fishy, or she passes, or you know, whatever mm-hmm. we say, it's not passes as a woman on the street.
Right.
It passes as a supermodel of the world.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so it's like, I think it's a love of,
it's a celebration.
It's a celebration. It's a love of what womanhood could be.
Yes.
Like I watch drag queens on the runway, and I just see a type of pride that I like I feel proud.
Yes. Yes.
So I don't know. I mean, it's hard. Like, I think that there is, I know where the thought is coming from of like, well, it does make fun of elements of femininity, but I think that those elements that are being ridiculed are the things that it's holding up a mirror. It's not the things that women make fun of them themselves. It's a satirical
bent on it.
It's taking possession of what society deems as being like something humorous or low about being a woman.
My instinct, I think that was extremely well said. And my instinct when I heard this was to, of course, defend the show mm-hmm. and defend the queens and defend RuPaul. Because I truly feel like it's a celebration.
Yeah.
I really do. I really feel like it's born out of admiration and mm-hmm, celebration.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I to hear that someone could be offended by it, like, really, like, send something off in me. I was like, oh no, God, no.
Well, because the other thing is, excuse me, Drag Race is so unique because it literally launches careers.
Right.
And so there's also a certain desperation and ambition that you see in the show that you definitely see in other reality shows, but it's not as authentic because it's just when you want to win American Idol, it's for the chance to become a star. When you want to win RuPaul's Drag Race, it is to become a star.
To become the biggest thing in your industry.
Yeah. I mean, you really walk away, even if you don't win.
Yeah,
I mean,
they've won by being a contestant.
You can come in seventh and you can walk away being like, I never have to have a day job again.
Right.
I mean, can you imagine?
Huge. No, honestly, it's crazy. I mean,
that's like RuPaul, the mastermind.
Right. Yeah. And you know, he says like, you know, this last season being like, you know, the 100th queen walking in was Derek Barry, and him being like, you know, this, I mean, it's launched the careers of 100 queens. You
truly.
Know what I mean? And then like also by association, like their close friends.
Yes.
You know, I think like Thorgy's success is her crew's success in a way.
It's like Ruby's success,
right?
In a way, you know.
Yeah,
like I would be interested in how they feel about it, but you know, it's definitely turns the heads in all the directions. Like I say about everything, you know, Frank Garcia Hell just posted something like, "This is going to be the time of year where a lot of our contemporaries get pretty cool jobs, and let's be happy for them." And I agree, like a rising tide lifts all ships.
It but I truly
think,
does.
Yeah, and I think like that's with the queens too, and also drag in general. RuPaul is nominated for an Emmy, and
oh
it's
my
been
God.
Such
you
a thing.
Look at the contest. You look at the competition.
And
you're
it's
like come on. I mean, you watch one episode, and you're like,
yeah.
What? Okay, wait. Okay, so this season.
Yeah,
this season. Let's talk about the season.
Do you think? I mean, I have a question for you guys.
Yeah,
come on,
because listeners,
on.
We have not been able to talk in person about the show yet. So
this is
for us and for you. This is for us and for you.
Yes.
Okay, do you guys think that? Okay, for people who don't watch the show, typically the way that the elimination works in a normal season is that the bottom two lip sync for their life, and that the person who then loses, RuPaul chooses the winner and the loser goes home.
Yep.
In this season of All Stars, the top two lip sync for their legacy. The person who wins chooses who of the bottom two gets to go home.
Yes.
Do you think that the agony and the emotion that the queens are feeling is what they thought was going to happen? Or did you think that it was going to be more, that producers thought it was going to be more of like a fun, catty thing with drama, but everyone's going to be like, well, bitch, we're here to win, so this is the way it is.
I think that it depends on the contestant. And I think that, for example, Alyssa Edwards,
queen,
honestly my favorite, I don't know that she will deserve to win in the end. I think it's very tough to debate against Alaska.
I think Alaska is
maybe one of the best drag queens ever of all time.
I love her.
I mean, but I think that Alyssa Edwards being so kind of not anguished about this whole thing means that she gets it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I think, of course, the producers want there to be agony and drama. That's why they sprung on them at the last second.
Yeah, but those first two episodes,
they were hard to watch.
Really,
were
really
tough.
Emotional.
And we had known before.
Well, yeah, it had been spoiled.
We had it spoiled. We knew from some intel that this was going to be the elimination process. In my mind, it was going to be a lot more lighthearted.
Like fun.
Yeah.
Yes. Like, you know, because in a normal season where they're not all such close friends, it would be like, thank God I finally have the opportunity to send Derek home.
Right? Yeah, yeah. But like, now it's tough because they have existing relationships. But I also think Ginger Minj, who just got eliminated by Alyssa, her career doesn't hurt for not going on more weeks on the show. You know
no,
what I mean?
She no.
You think Katya's would have?
No, I don't think so at all. I don't think any of their careers are affected by it.
Yeah.
I think these are all working queens.
Established.
Who are at the height of their fields. I think Coco Montrese will have the same or not better career that she has.
Do you think that the tweets between Coco
and Roxy,
what do you think about that?
I think it probably feels authentic. Coco's probably really mad, or if they're just, if this is like a setup,
it's
for
just like
Coco
a
return.
Year later, and it's yeah. like, do you actually really have those harsh feelings towards sure. Roxy a year later?
I think we have to remember that it's drag, and I think some of them get it and some of them don't, and I think some of them are playing into it.
Or I think all of this is being exhumed for Coco because of the social media reaction. They're like, wow, right. Coco, Roxy really fucked you over.
Follow-up so question. That. I mean, like, I was thinking about this today. Do you think that the bit about Fifi getting death threats was added into the episode after Fifi got death threats?
What makes you think
last week?
That?
Can't
it
really get
so
a grasp
bizarre.
On this. And this is, like, something that I'm thinking about. So, for those of you who may not be familiar with it, there's a character. I'm going to call them characters because that's what they make them into on the show. There's a contestant on the show. On All Stars 2, Fifi O'Hara, who was on season 4 of RuPaul's Drag Race and really has the...
Truly the villain.
The persona
nightmare.
Is... She's the villain of the series. You know what
yeah.
I mean?
Oh,
she,
yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
She was the most knowing, vicious contestant in series history.
She was a bully. She yeah. was mean.
Manipulative.
She was intolerant. Mm-hmm. She was... selfish.
Toxic.
Yeah.
She was toxic.
It was horrible.
I mean,
and she's back on the show. And
she was 20... And she was... 25
ugh,
at the time.
So not a baby. You know what I mean? Definitely not to say that you can't be going through difficult
things. I mean, Adora is 25 now.
Yeah. So the thing is, she's come on All Stars 2, and it's been pretty clear
for
from
her
the episode.
Redemption.
For her redemption. And she wants to reestablish her legacy as someone who isn't mean, as someone who isn't manipulative. As a
transformed queen, because the main conflict was that she thought that... I mean, kind of similar to Roxy.
Right.
She thought that pageant queens were true drag queens and that everyone else was a hack. Roxy
yeah.
thought that comedy queens were a hack and
Fifi
you know, Fifi thought
true.
That Sharon, a spooky queen, was a hack, but...
Fifi called Sharon Needles, go back to
Party
City,
City
where
you
belong.
Belong.
And that was like the highest insult you could do. Like, you're a fucking cheap ass joke queen.
But if you rewatch that fight... That is not the meanest thing she says.
No. I mean,
like,
the meanest
that
thing
is,
she say?
That's
Jiggly
like,
Caliente, she's the meanest too.
Ugh.
No, but no. But even that fight where she's yelling at Sharon, mm-hmm. I rewatched that fight and go back to Party City Where You Belong is like the line, but that the whole thing is like
oh, yeah.
kind of worse than that because Sharon
goes to her.
Sharon goes to her and she's like, well, okay, so I guess what I'll say is the meanest thing that Fifi says is she goes, you're not my sister.
Yeah.
That I think that's like kind of brutal. Like, because Sharon says, I just wanted
I
to tell
you
because
you're
my
sister.
Like
yeah.
a sister. I came to you like a sister. And she goes, you're not
you're
my,
not
sister.
My sister.
Yeah.
Which is like hard.
Yeah.
And so basically.
Can you imagine someone saying that in All Stars 2? It's unthinkable.
So basically what's going on in All Stars 2 is she's come on and she's like, look, that wasn't me. I've grown up a lot. Like,
now,
I said all those things, but I've changed. And now.
And my style of drag has changed. I'm actually more like Sharon now than Sharon is.
Yeah. And
which is
okay.
laughable.
She's now become a more creative, artistic.
Cosplay queen.
Cosplay queen.
Wait, which for so, example, cosplay queen does not equal cutting edge. Okay. Keep going.
So
ooh, honey.
She, however, has been edited into a sort of villain edit again. And you
yes.
would think that someone with experience on a reality show who knows, should know what not to do to get this edit, just wouldn't give them the sound bites.
Yeah.
But
okay.
she's a fully come for beloved queen Alyssa Edwards saying she's not that funny, is too much, and like is distracting, and just like keeps coming for her. And it's like, so what's the... deal here. Like,
so, I mean, so Fifi went on her Twitter last week and she said, I'm watching this episode at the same time you are. I'm devastated. I had no idea I was going to be getting this villain edit again. The editors have screwed me over. The producers have screwed me over. I'm getting death threats all over again. This is a nightmare. And other queens came to her defense and were like, she was not that bad or what, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
And those of us on our Facebook group where we discuss and ruminate on the episodes, we were saying, like, do we think it's producer driven? Do we think it's Fifi driven? And I had said, I will totally believe that in this particular episode, she got a villain edit, even though she didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah.
But I do not think that the producers would set her up with a villain edit if she did not have material to deliver down the line.
There you go.
And even in this episode, before last episode, there was nothing that she said that was unsavory, like...
Yeah.
In her talking head confessionals, it was just it was like this perceived kind of like back alley, mind games that she was playing. But in this past week's episode, she had some talking heads to the camera where she was being
talking shit about Alyssa.
Talking shit about Alyssa. And it's like, okay, so first of all, I know that there's a big fight coming because it is being built up like there's a big fight.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, you said that to producers.
Just don't do it if you don't think it's going
to
be included.
You can't say that it's an edit if it's what you were saying to producers.
But to answer your question about whether or not that whole package about her getting death threats for a full year was authentic, like, it seemed to have worked into the workroom scenes where Detox and Phoebe were sort of apologizing.
I think so, too. I just have a gut feeling that producers added that part into the episode before it aired this week after last week.
Like, they shot pickups?
No, like, I think they had that footage and then they were like, let's add in some stuff about that because I feel like last week the blowback to Phoebe was so brutal. There's a part of me that thinks that producers were like, oh, no, we don't want her getting death threats anymore, and like added in like a little bit of a sob story.
Because Matt was pointing out how Phoebe had this whole section. What were you saying?
I was just saying the edit of the show is confusing this week.
Yeah.
And it makes me feel like maybe the show is confusing us a little bit on purpose. So I think that for the whole first half of the episode, you can't get around the fact that literally in the opening, when they all come back into the workroom and they're getting changed out of their outfits from the runway for the last night, Phoebe immediately goes off on Alyssa. It's recurring throughout the episode. She says something to Alyssa while they're rehearsing. They have a whole section of Ginger Minj assessing Fifi's behavior where she's like, Phoebe is acting manipulative, and I think it's because she came on the show to do this, blah, blah, blah.
I loved that part from Ginger.
Yeah. Ginger was great.
Ginger was great in that episode because she started off and she's genuine. She goes, I love Phoebe. Mm-hmm. And you know it's true. And she was like, but...
Yeah, that was a great moment. Like, that pause was...
Yeah, it's tasty.
I mean, also, the show is so knowing about the edit
now.
Like, cutting to the producer saying...
It is such a meta show.
Like, about the sound bites about coming back into the workroom. Like, the show is so knowing about its edit. It knows what it's doing. So then...
Well, especially for something like All Stars. It's like, you know, it's us watching the show. Yeah, it's not first-time viewers.
For the first half of the whole episode, it was Phoebe this way, and then to have that segment in there about how Phoebe is getting death threats, and have that talking head of respected Queen Alaska saying shut the fuck up to everyone who's like hater, basically, like, I'm just very interested to see what the end game is with Phoebe with this season, because they are giving us two different things.
Maybe it is producers doing damage control.
That's what I mean. That was my theory. It seemed so out of place that I was just like, They had this footage, and I'm sure they just were like, we are moving forward with our storyline for the season, but we gotta take out a couple minutes of, you know, because there was no video. Yeah. Here's another thing: there was no video from Rue at the beginning of the episode where she just came in. There was no mini challenge. So I mean, there was a part of me that was like, this was added in.
Yeah,
it's a conspiracy theory, but it is my conspiracy theory that it was added in as reaction to last week where Phoebe badmouthed producers for saying that they were giving her a villain edit needlessly,
honestly tough to dispute.
I mean, there was a part in this episode where she says something to Alyssa about her. So the part where they're sitting in the chairs and she's talking about
the dress,
that part was like, Phoebe, shut the fuck up. But the part where they're just kind of kidding around on the stage, and she says something and she's like, "How was Alyssa? Like, how was my day? How was it? Was it good?
Really good?" She goes, "Eh."
I mean, like, both of them cracked up at that. I don't think that was like that. Seemed like
no. I would say that's a Bowen during rehearsal all the time.
Oh.
I mean, like, it's a joke.
Who's
it's
the Phoebe there?
I'm the Phoebe. No, you're the
I'm the Phoebe.
Who do you think you're most spiritually
Alyssa
aligned
Edwards.
With? Yeah.
100%. I would do her for Snatch Game if I had the chance.
I'm Alyssa Edwards. I'm a Katya.
You are a Katya?
I'm a Jujubee.
But that's an old one. About all time.
All time.
Oh, all time. That's hard.
Think I'm
Alyssa. I think you try to confine within this season just because it's it's too broad.
I want to say this is. It's crazy if I say Alaska, but that's not even I would say Katya too, because I'm not like, because when she said I finally feel like a star, I was
like, oh my
like,
God, I know.
That was huge.
I was like, wait, I don't fully relate to that in this in some way, but like that is so, that's so cool.
I love Katya. I mean,
Katya is amazing. I think, and you know what sucks is we're going to watch the next episode and the narrative is going to be, well, Alyssa just broke the rules that we created and sent
But
Ginger
the only
home.
People who care about the rules are people who I don't want on the in the show anymore
exactly.
anyway.
Fifi and Detox and Roxy.
Yeah.
Detox, I want to
I'm
on the show.
Not a huge Detox fan, but I know you guys.
I've been thinking a lot about Detox. I think Detox wants to win very badly.
Yeah. I just know.
I just think that Detox's strengths are only going to be on the runway.
Yeah.
I think Detox is a good lip syncer and performer, but I'd said this on the thread today. It's interesting to watch the lip sync between Detox and Alyssa this week because you just don't watch Detox.
You can't compete
you
with
can't
Alyssa.
Take your eyes off Alyssa Edwards. Yeah. She does the most interesting things.
Her
she
Annie always, Oakley was so
Annie
funny.
Was so funny.
She's just, you're not able to look away from her. And also, it's not even just her performance. It's the way she does her makeup. It's the way she looks. Her eyes explode off the stage. I think she's an underrated queen in terms of her looks. I will
Alyssa?
Say that,
oh,
Alyssa.
Yeah.
I think that she's got a distinct look that is Alyssa Edwards, like something about the way she does her eyes.
Yes.
Like you just know it's her. It's like when you turn on the radio and you know it's Rihanna. You know what I mean? There's just something.
right.
This is the Rihanna.
There's the Rihanna of drag.
What I'm saying is it's like, it's distinct. Yes. It's not just good. It's also distinct. Like Roxanne Andrews is good, but is it distinct?
There is something
where
to be said.
Where are my people at?
Where are my people at? There is something to be said. And I think Alaska is representing this so well. Alaska used to have a distinct signature look, like the high hair, the beehive, whatever. But this season, she's shown how
diverse
she is.
That sleek lob from last week, I gagged.
That was the gag of the season for me so far, was Alaska's
looks.
Yes,
the latex look.
Somebody said it's what Taylor Swift wished she looked like at the Met Ball, and I was like, that's literally it.
That's true.
I hated Taylor Swift's look at the Met Ball.
It was bad this year.
Yeah, she...
But it's where she first started dancing with Tom Hiddleston, if you believe what the people want you to.
Honestly,
I literally have already talked. I have got so many. If you think that Taylor Swift actually had jury duty, you are mistaken, honey. No.
She looked too unkempt.
I just, that is not. Oh, okay. The day after the VMAs, when she wasn't there, suddenly the story comes out. Oh, I had jury duty. Oh, Taylor Swift's of the people. She goes to jury duty. She took a picture with my mom.
I just don't believe anything about her is authentic.
Okay.
I don't know. I feel bad, but it's just like, I feel bad. I don't know.
Don't feel bad.
The thing is,
she said such a weird arc, and like we fall in love with her, we hate her, we fall back in love, we hate her again.
She's now gotten to the place where she's too far away.
Yeah, she's too far
away. She's
gone.
Just too far away, and like I will always enjoy her music. I'm sure it will.
I like her music. I love what she does for her fans. Yeah. I do not care about who she dates and how many.
Nope,
that is her prerogative. You go, girl.
He wore a shirt that said I heart TS to the beach. But, it's not. Okay.
But he was paid to wear it, honey.
Yeah,
but what's the function? Like, why?
It can only help his career.
It's literally to lie to everyone, though. It's like so people in like middle America, they believe it. And that to me is manipulative, and that makes her no better than Fifi
can't
O'Hara.
Can't she do the
but
Gaga thing and lay low for a little bit?
She is. Can't. She has posted like four things on Instagram since the
Kim Kardashian
since the video thing. And they're all birthday posts for friends.
Yeah.
Happy birthday, Selena Gomez. I mean,
literally said to Kanye West on the thing, I'm like this close to overexposure. She's aware of it.
Yeah. I hate it. Oh, that video is so great because she sounds so fucking fake on it. Ooh,
the video's good.
The video's great. Kim is a genius.
Oh, God.
I just love anything. I'm a little bit like Let's Burn the World about the whole thing where I just want it all. I want to know. I want every gay celebrity to come out. I want everything revealed. I just want this. I just don't think it's good to have everyone have all the lies. I don't think it's good for people that are growing up.
It's not. And I have to say, I love the drama. It really isn't.
No.
I mean, I love the drama. I love the conspiracies. I do believe the conspiracies, but it's so easy to not like her, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Not because of the collection of the friends or any of that stuff. It's because she is so protect, like, to me, she seems invincible. Like, what could she possibly do that would alienate her fan base? She already has six, like, mansions. Like, what could she possibly do? And yet, she won't say Black Lives Matter, or she won't call herself a feminist, or she won't, you know,
support
like
Hillary Clinton.
She won't support Hillary Clinton. So it's like all of these things that like come from this place of like fear and protection of her image. It's so boring to me. I'm like, next, like she's writing her songs like, okay, like get Matt Martin or whatever the fuck his name is on like some other songs and for Britney and we'll be fine.
Yeah, honestly,
I mean, or
also,
something, whatever.
Just, like, hearing like the tea about her from people that actually work like adjacent to her. Like, it's pretty revealing.
Yeah. I mean, like, she's so, like, I can't stress enough, like, she's so good to her fans, and she's such a good role model for girls in a lot of ways. Like, she is the face of her own company that is herself. Mm-hmm. She plays an instrument. She is in control of her life. She's smart. She doesn't apologize for who she dates. I mean, like, I do think that those things are good. And she is in contact with her fans. She's very human. She clearly is grateful for the career she has. Like, she's not an evil person, but I just, like, I don't know.
What did you think about the Lena Dunham, Amy Schumer interview?
That interview sucks.
Yeah, it totally sucks.
I get Lenny Letter and I love it. And I got it in the morning and I was still in bed and I just was like, this is awful.
The shooting victims thing, like, just, I mean, like, the whole, I mean, everything got to me.
It's just, I think,
it was, all of it was bad.
All of it was bad.
Yeah.
I think it's just a case of, like, I don't think that they're evil by any means.
No.
I don't even think that they're racist by any means, like, knowingly. But I think that they're super privileged. And I think it's a case of two super privileged rich people.
I just
getting
think,
together
like,
and like, talking to each other and then hitting publish because they feel like they can.
I was going to say, like, you know, you think you want to be on a fly on the wall.
Yeah.
But, like, you kind of don't. Yeah, don't. It's a lot. But
Amy Schumer is, like, so from Long Island.
You relate
like,
to it.
It's just when she played a character when she was on SNL.
Where
she was like,
so somebody took it.
The bachelorette party, and basically Cecily, it's like Cecily's bachelorette party, and they're all friends, and then it's like her one friend from like the bar. Amy Schumer plays like the bartender from the bar she frequents. And then the purse goes missing, and Amy Schumer's like, okay, so somebody took it. And, like, she like, is that person on some level.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Hold for sirens.
Do you hear all that? I think that's actually a sign that we should wrap our conversation on RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars 2 with this. So, how do you see the rest of the season playing out?
Ooh, great.
Like, map out what you think the rest of the season is going to look like, Nicole.
Okay. The we're now down to six.
We're down to six, and I want let's give a quick recap. We got Alaska, the front runner, who is, you know, incredible. Alyssa Edwards, true entertainer, who can do things on stage that no one else can.
Katya,
fan favorite, wild card, I would say.
Much improved.
New confidence, really big time fan favorite.
Yeah,
Detox.
You know, kind of unparalleled, like, scene look queen.
Yeah.
Like, new drag.
Yes,
like,
yes.
Well-known drag queen.
Yes,
yeah.
Mama.
Then we've got Roxy Andrews, reformed, quote-unquote, bully, runway queen of season 5.
I think she's trying.
She's putting in her
effort.
She's
definitely putting in her effort.
I think she's just really good at being mean. She's a natural bully.
Yeah.
And she's just working really hard to just, you know, not indulge that because it's a high stress situation. I think she's doing a good job. Yeah.
And then we've got Villainess, new cosplay, artistic queen, former pageant villain of season 4 that we spoke about at length earlier, Fifi O'Hara.
So
how do we see this going?
Okay, I think this coming week is going to be a pairs challenge.
Top six, a
classic top six challenge where people are paired up and it's going to be, okay, well, who do we, okay, so I think it's going to be
Roxy, maybe.
It's either going to be, I think it's going to be Fifi Alyssa because like
we're being
set up for that.
We truly are.
And then I think it's going to be, I mean, I would hope it would be Alaska Katya because that would be so fun.
Yeah.
But I think it's going to be like Katya, Roxy, and Detox Alaska, something like that.
Or it'd be interesting if they paired Detox and Roxy together as like the two remaining members. Like the what is it now? Like now that Alaska's out of it, like the two.
Alaska Talks?
Yeah, but now Alaska's not in Alaska Talks anymore. So what is it
Rotox.
now? Rotox,
yeah. Ugh. Also, like, sidebar for eye roll for Alaska Talks.
Yeah,
I know. Yeah, that was so hard to watch in season 5 because it was bullying.
Okay, so paired challenge.
I think paired challenge next week. Another typical elimination. I think the following week is going to be when they bring all 5 queens back. It's going to be half and half. Mm-hmm. I think someone's
Adore would have to come back then.
Oh, probably. Yeah, then I guess Adore's not. So it'll be 4 and 4 and 5. Oh,
they'll probably excuse one of the 5. From like whatever brawl it is.
I think they're going to do something where like there's going to be like a mini competition just between the eliminated queens, and whoever wins gets to like replace the person of their choosing, or maybe the person who eliminated them potentially. And then I think
that's what I think.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's definitely, I mean, but who knows, this season is truly,
it's insane.
The architect of the season, we can never hope to.
Yeah.
But I guess I think, I mean, you know, you don't know who's going to make crazy decisions. I would hope that the top 3 would be Alyssa, Katya, and Alaska.
Same. I think that's what you all want.
But
you just don't know because none of it has made any sense. No. Because it's truly up to them. It seems like it's not up to the producers.
And any top 3 in the last couple seasons of the actual show there's been a wild card that's snuck its way in there.
And I think the fact that the producers are being so kind of willy-nilly with who goes home means that the eliminated queens must come back in a big way.
There's going to be a huge upset.
Yeah. I think there's part of me that also thinks like there might just be an entire episode that's just eliminated queens.
Yeah.
Because we have this whole vacancy from Adore leaving.
Yeah.
Like,
can't have prepared for that though.
I have no idea. But it's like, I mean, Rue does what she will do. But I think one other thing that I've been thinking about, obviously Alaska is the one to beat. She's a revolutionary queen.
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't mind her going home because she's so ahead of everyone else. Like, if we're talking about like Alaska and Alyssa and Katya, who of those 3 we would rather replace with a wild card, I would say I would want Alaska to be replaced just because
it'll be more fun to watch.
And I would rather see Katya and Alyssa get to fight for the crown than Alaska. Alaska really could have won her season.
Yeah.
Like, In a lot of ways, she did. Like, she wasn't the official winner, but she did win her season.
She surpassed Jinx, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was, I think Jinx's win was cool. Like, I liked Jinx, but I think that Alaska, it's weird watching the show because it feels like Alaska won.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Matt, what's your outline for the rest of the show?
I think there's been so much focus on Fifi that I just think there has to be something to do with her.
Some shoe has
sometimes to what they do on the show is they'll focus on a queen a lot because their time is up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't be surprised to see Fifi go home next week. And I also wouldn't be surprised to see her make the top fucking 3.
I mean, the thing is, in my opinion, in season 4, Fifi stayed way longer than she should have. I was shocked that she made the top 3. Mm-hmm. So to me, like,
she beat Latrice Royale.
I mean, I can't.
Insanity.
But what the thing is, if you do watch that season, you watch the season 6 lip sync and it's Sharon and Fifi's doing It's Raining Men. Fifi had tanked the challenge for them. Then they sing they do It's Raining Men and Sharon kills her. I mean, Fifi does like her fucking wig comes off.
It's horrible.
And they disqualified Willem. So, which was like the stroke of luck for Fifi. But Fifi, I do think, though, and I'm rewatching season 4 now because I really needed to finally understand the Fifi
great
thing. It's amazing.
Season.
Fifi, some of the drags she does towards the end of season 4 is better than a lot of what she's done in All Stars 2.
I mean, she should have honestly gone home the first week with that leotard.
Absolutely.
In a lot of ways.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That
and
runway
her
look.
Horrible performance.
Her horrible performance, but that bodysuit was heinous.
The following week she comes out with that rubber duck bullshit.
Okay, so now like
I do think we'll have a top 3. I hope that they'll give us Alaska, Alyssa, and Katya. However, I do have a slight of, I just can't see Alyssa winning despite what I really want. And I have an aversion to Katya winning for some reason. I just feel like if Alaska doesn't win, we'll look on it and be like, well, we all really know that Alaska was the best. But the thing is, like, what would I want to happen? I would want Alyssa Edwards to win All Stars 2. Yes. But I also think there's something to the fact of like, she doesn't win and she's like, all right, I still do my thing.
Yep.
What about you?
My only thing that I'll add to this, just because we're running out of time, is I think we're getting a Shantae You Both Stay or something.
Yeah, because, for sure.
Because it's six left and we have three.
I mean, and
three
even the criticisms this week were like, there's
really
very
good.
Little to say. Yeah.
And there's six left. There's only three more episodes until we get a top three. Like, wait a minute. Like, there needs to be more. We can't just have a six episode season. I think the series order for this was, the season order was like eight episodes or something. So we'll see.
Well, we do have whatever's coming with the eliminated queens.
Yes.
What was
yes.
the preview for next week? Did you
I
see it?
I haven't seen it.
Yeah.
It
was everybody, all the queens, like, attacking Alyssa for sort of switching the strategy.
Oh, they do attack her.
They also haven't had a sewing challenge yet this season.
Yeah, they didn't go into the challenge for whatever reason.
So basically, it was entirely focused on them turning on Alyssa.
Yeah,
it's
a shot. I'm remembering now. It's like a shot of Fifi and Detox and
Roxy.
And Roxy all being like,
well, Alyssa flipped the script or whatever. So anyway.
I hate that. Because honestly, who the fuck... If Alyssa had eliminated Katya, that would have been insane.
That's incorrect. Yeah. That was the incorrect
insane.
Choice.
Yeah.
And I think she's totally in the right saying that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And also, like, they didn't look on the back line like they were all that shocked. I mean, Ginger gives her exit line and they all crack up and it seems like they're all fine.
Yeah.
I don't know. It seems I just don't want to deal. I don't want to deal with them coming for Alyssa about this.
Well,
like,
it's drama, honey. All right,
it's
let's move
happen.
On. Let's move on to I Don't Think So, Honey.
This is the centerpiece
segment.
Of our podcast here at Las Culturistas. Is I Don't Think So, Honey. We have 60 seconds to rail against something in culture.
Wow.
Bowen and I famously do not prepare for this. And end
I
up,
have something prepared.
You have something prepared?
Yeah.
I'm actually going to do a callback with mine.
A callback?
So,
do you mind getting the timer
ready? I'm
going
to get the timer ready. And we've had some amazing I Don't Think So Honeys in the past. We've had a high bar. Are you prepared?
I have not prepared something, but
well,
I will
but
be
you
able
know
to.
What? That's what makes Nicole a great improviser. See her on The Nightmare.
And that's what makes this a great segment is that people don't come prepared.
Yes.
Okay, let's go.
All right, here we go. Bowen Yang's I Don't Think So Honey, and the 60 seconds begins now.
I don't think so, honey, people who listen to this podcast and don't play it at 1.5 speed, mama. I don't think so, honey, if you expect to sit through this podcast and finish this episode listening to us at normal speed, I cannot stand the speed that normal humans talk at, and I would rather die than listen to a podcast of recorded dialogue where it's not spoken at 1.5 speed. Guys, try this out. Just hear me out. I don't think so, honey. Play any podcast, play any YouTube video. This has gone on to YouTube videos for me. I refuse to watch a YouTube video without playing at 1.5 speed because I do not have enough time in my day to listen to someone speak at regular speed, mama. I don't think so, honey. Try this out. Listen to this podcast at 1.5 speed. We all sound so much better, so much smarter, so much wittier than we would if we spoke at just one time speed, okay? Try it out. Two times speed is too much. 1.5 is just that perfect middle ground. I'm like Goldilocks, bitch. This is speed. I don't think so, honey. Listen to this podcast at 1.5 speed.
That's 1 minute.
That's 1 minute. Oh, I ran out of steam there, but I drove
now
my point
Now I'm ready.
Home.
Start my timer.
Bitch, okay, here we go. Matt Rogers, I don't think so, honey. Time starts now.
I don't think so, honey. The face of sensationalism, Bowen Yang. Here he comes riding through I Don't Think So, Honey, on my podcast, too. Honestly, asserting that you should listen to it at an unnatural pace. This is insane. We listen to podcasts to connect. We listen to podcasts to hear a human voice. Not a human voice pitched up, honey. I don't think so, honey. Listen, I don't want to see you shake your head. I don't think so, you and this millennial culture, this comment culture, coming in here needing to rip apart what's natural. And you know that, I don't think so, honey, Bowen Yang, you're going to see him in 30 years. He's going to have a new face. He's going to be plastic surgery. We're going to go out to LA and Bowen Yang is going to prescribe. Bowen Yang is going to prescribe to it all. He's going to change himself. I don't need anyone to change my voice. My voice is high enough and fast enough. If I said something, you can tell. I said at the pace I wanted to say it. So I'm going to say slowly, I don't think so, honey. Don't you dare listen to this any faster than it should have been.
And that's 1 minute. Matt, wow. let's say something clarifying, bitch.
Oh yeah, by all means, be your own PR.
1.5 times speed does not mean you pitch up. This has nothing to do with pitch, mama. Don't get it twisted.
Pitch perfect. That's what
oh
I think.
Oh my god.
Are. Listen, I'm so sorry you had to see that.
Nicole, mommy, daddy, please don't fight.
Oh. I'm the daddy.
I'm the dadu.
I'm the mamu. All right, so... Stupid. All right, Nicole.
Okay.
It's time. This is... This is your legacy.
Okay.
This is... They have to think about it like that. This season of RuPaul has been all about legacy. This is Nicole's legacy. I don't think so, honey. Nicole Silverberg starts right now.
I don't think so, honey. You showed me the movie Joy on an airplane. No the fuck way. I don't think so, honey. An airplane is a fucking prison. I can't leave. There's a screen in front of me. I can't turn my eyes away. What, you want me to gouge my eyes out on a plane? Give me a spoon, honey. I'll try. The movie Joy is a fucking phantasmagoria of indulgence by whoever the fuck came up with the idea. It has no plot. It has no talent. I don't think so, honey. You want to tell me that Jennifer Lawrence is supposed to play more than one age and we're supposed to feel bad for her? Honey, Jennifer Lawrence has the most terrible life in that fucking movie, and you know how it ends? She gets a more terrible life. I don't fucking care about that mop. Why is that movie 3 hours long? Why is it filmed in three different styles? I'm on an airplane, bitch. Don't do this to me. I don't think so, honey. I'd rather the plane go down with me and the president on it than me have to see one more frame of Joy the film one more time. An Oscar nom? I don't think so, honey.
And that's one minute.
Let me tell you something. There is a problem in Hollywood, and it's Jennifer Lawrence playing all ages.
Any age. I can't.
She plays all ages. She plays your 6-year-old niece. She plays your 80-year-old dying grandmother of Alzheimer's in the hospital.
Let me tell you, who are you kidding?
I don't even think that David O. Russell came up with the story. It's like there was a script, and David O. Russell got it, and he was like, I love it. And then he was like, I'm rewriting it.
I'll tell you who came up with the story, Annie Mumolo.
That's right. But her script got totally rewritten. She is not responsible for what we saw.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. It is the worst movie I've ever seen.
Annie Mumolo, Star of Bad Moms.
Before it came out, there was like Oscar talk about Jennifer Lawrence and the biopic of a woman that came up with the miracle mop. I was like, fuck you. I am not seeing that.
Yes.
And then
I
tried to watch it on the plane.
Jennifer Lawrence wasn't terrible. In it.
No, she's great.
She was fine. She did the best she could. But God, that movie is fucking off. It's a scourge.
I mean, look, this is... David O. Russell is so hit or miss, though.
I mean, he's also like a bad person.
Mostly miss. Yeah. And he's and the way he's talked to what's her name?
Amy Adams.
To Amy
Frances
Adams.
Frances McDormand?
Oh, Lily Tomlin.
No, Lily Tomlin. That's who it was.
Disgusting.
Oh, my God. Unforgivable.
Did he call her the C word?
He called her the C word.
Ooh, and he got into a fist fight with George Clooney. Yeah.
I can't even deal with... I literally can't deal with anyone that says that word.
David O. Russell is the hero of Hollywood.
Yeah, that masculinity.
Honestly, I could put someone on blast right now. Let's just say I'm close to someone that called our neighbor the C word, even if she was being difficult. And I was like, you can't do that!
Ooh, you have to tell me after.
Yes.
We have a lot of names that we need to share off the air.
We've been saying names.
A mutual friend.
Mutual friend.
Yes, honey.
I will spill all the tea, and literally, it's no tea. It's no shade. It's all tea. I just butchered that.
Yeah. That's okay.
Sorry, Rue.
The only name we did say today was Janie Stoller. God bless her.
I love her. I love her so much.
Janie.
Yeah.
This has been such an amazing episode, and can I tell you, this is a reveal. The first time I met Nicole Silverberg was we were in training for Story Pirates, mm-hmm. and we were put in a story together for training. It was about I played a bully.
Yes.
And you played the bully's girlfriend.
I did play the bully's girlfriend.
And we hadn't spoken before that, and Nicole's character choice was to come out with like a speech impediment.
Yes, I remember
and
this.
And everyone was like, that's very cool. They hired somebody with a speech impediment because you did such a good speech impediment.
It was really good.
And then later on, we spoke, and I was like, she doesn't have a speech impediment at all. She just is a genius.
That's what everybody
just good.
Oh, that's what everybody could tell me. That
was speech impediment realness.
Yes. I
the Bowie's girlfriend.
I'm the Bowie's girlfriend. We're gonna make a whirlwind hurricane in the hallway.
Yes. Authentic.
I remember. Oh my God, you remember the details. I remember there was stink bombs in it.
Oh, yeah. Woody Fu played a janitor.
Yes.
That was a great cotillion.
And Sasheer Zamata was in that as well.
Yes. Literally insane.
Star-studded.
But this is, it's just so funny.
I did not know that people thought that I had a speech impediment. That gives me great joy.
No, literally.
It was incredible.
Somebody was like, that's crazy. I guess Nicole really has a speech impediment. And I was like, you know, I guess, you know, it's important. Star Trek hires all types
diversity,
of kids
can
see themselves
honey.
On stage. You know, diversity. Yes. We needed someone with like, so can't pronounce their R's. And then you pronounce your R's wonderfully. Thank
you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
guys, this has been Nicole Silverberg. Thank you so much for being a guest.
Check out Gosh Time.
This is a dream. Thank you so much for having me.
She co-hosts with Anna Drezin and potentially someone new now.
Yeah, Rachel Winitsky is going to be joining us.
Rachel Winitsky will be taking over the podcast.
Future guest of the show, Rachel Winitsky.
Oh, yeah. We have to get Rachel on. This is Las Culture Recess. Tune in next time. We're so excited. And watch RuPaul's fucking Drag Race.
Please.
Yes.
We love you.
Bye.
Bye.
Forever. This has been a Forever Dog production. Executive produced by Joe Cilio, Alex Ramsey, and Brett Boehm. For more podcasts, please visit foreverdogproductions.com.